There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Craig Hoffman. I feel pretty good, actually, right now. I think I had like a little like gummy bear thing before the... Not again. There you go again. Making faces.
The Hoffman Show.
That's why I was like trying to describe it in a way. No, like a piece of candy. So I think I'm on a sugar high right now.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Watermelon sugar high. Watermelon sugar high. Watermelon sugar high.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, and it is time for some insight on our top story of the day, which is that we are in earnest starting our prep for the Browns on Sunday. So let's bring in an expert. It's time for Not My Beat. I said computer. There
Today's
we go.
Top story
there
from
we
the
go.
Of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Gotta love technology. All right, let's go. Hopefully the phone's working better than the computer system. Jonathan Peterlin hosts nights up at 92.3 The Fan, our sister station in Cleveland, Ohio. Jonathan, how are you, sir?
Craig, what's up, man? How you been?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Despite the wars of technology, I'm doing good. I'm sure I know your boss is leaving you guys, the great Andy Roth up there, but I'm sure he left everything in perfect working order before he departed.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying that tells me you know Andy, so you know exactly how he left it. But yeah, I know your listeners don't care in the slightest bit, so we don't need to like elaborate on Andy, but we're good to go. We'll be fine, but obviously he's great and he's one of the best.
Yes, he's great, despite sometimes the things that he says to me. Okay, Jonathan, let's talk about...
What did he say to you?
I mean, honestly, Jonathan, what hasn't he said to me? I've known Andy for like a decade. So, you know, as we said, our listeners probably don't care too much, but we all have a friend who loves to jab us and then is like, by the way, how you doing? And Andy's that friend for me.
Well, you need people like that in your life.
Yes.
He's trying to keep it humble. That's all it is.
That is exactly. Boy, does he do that. That is for sure. He will be thrilled to hear this. Yes, Andy, you're great at what you do, keeping me humble and occasionally maybe even being mean. Okay, so the Browns. I feel like Andy should have been paying you hazard pay for watching this offense. They have not been good. Are there signs of hope, though? Because if you look close enough, you squint your eyes when you watch the tape, I think you can see a couple of things maybe starting to get a little bit better. They're digging out of a massive hole. So what is kind of the conversation up there around this offense right now?
Yeah, if you have to squint to see it, I choose to squint because I think there was a lot there in the Raiders game that a lot of fans – and listen, it's weird in Cleveland right now because if you hate Deshaun Watson, then you're just going to pick out the bad. And if you love Deshaun Watson, then the man can do no wrong. And he's just so polarizing that it feels like no one's in the middle. I'm trying to be in the middle, even though I like to pick sides in sports radio. He started off horrible. It wasn't great. Cowboys game, Tom Brady, it was awful. And he's gotten progressively better with each week. And that game last week, Craig, was not on him. Like, that was not why the Browns lost that game. Browns have so many more issues beyond Deshaun Watson right now. And that's why I'm kind of excited for this weekend, because you're watching a lot of Commanders games. You guys are excited for your offense, but your defense isn't particularly good. They look better against Kyler Murray, but this is an opportunity for Deshaun to, like, keep building on what he did in that Raiders game. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more optimism attached to the offense right now from a lot of different angles. Although the offensive line stinks, it's a complete mess right now, and that's putting a kindly to messes out there. And then the defense, number one defense in the NFL last year, they're not the same defense. And so that's where I think the problems arise.
So I want to circle back to all the football-y stuff in a second, but let's tackle the elephant in the room first since you mentioned it. Like, Watson is a polarizing figure because of really terrible things that he did, and even more that now that have come out that he is accused to have been doing. How does that affect, like, how has that affected the fan base? Because in years past, if you told me the Browns were coming to town, I'd be like, oh, they're going to travel really well. You know, whether it's called FedEx Field, now called Northwest Stadium, the stadium out in Landover where the Commanders play, there's going to be a lot of Browns fans there. I would imagine, based off of the recent history of the franchise, in terms of the on-field struggles, obviously not thriving, maybe better than, you know, the decade prior, but low bar. And certainly, I'm speaking from Washington. I realize the context here. But the... We certainly are also familiar with the organization doing tremendously embarrassing things. And I think, you know, signing Watson to the money they did, considering what he was accused of, like, that is beyond embarrassing. There is real visceral reactions for a lot of people to that. So how does that impact the way, I would say, you do your job, but also the way the fan base feels about him specifically and the team writ large?
Well, from my perspective, I have taken just a hardline stance of I got to separate the art from the artist when it comes to this stuff. And so, like, if I'm in the draft last year telling the Eagles ended up taking Jalen Carter, but I was like, hey, listen, if Jalen Carter's there, you got to find a way to take him. I'm not asking him you to invite him over to your house for dinner, just asking him to be your defensive end. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to take that approach, I'm going to take that approach. And that's kind of how I had to do it with Deshaun as well. Like, same deal. Like, I just got to separate the art from the artist. And that's kind of how I justify it. That's kind of how I live with it. Like, I'm not asking Deshaun to come over to your house or date your daughter or do anything like that. I'm just asking him to be the quarterback. And so I think a lot of Browns fans have kind of adopted that. It's sad that we kind of had to adopt that, but right. You have to adopt that. And I would say, as far as the amount of fan base that has been affected by it, I mean, people daily, that'll tell me that they just can't root for the Browns until Deshaun is gone or Deshaun is no longer a part of the team. And that's just their reality. So, it's definitely fractured some of the fan base, but it's just a large number is just kind of dealing with it. And I do think there's, on the other side of that, I think there's a large number of people that has just made Deshaun Watson their guy for whatever reason, and they're just ready to see this thing through. And they look at what he did last week, and they're like, let's build on that. Let's keep going. But, yeah, it hasn't been easy. I'm not going to say it's been easy.
Yeah, no, I get the position that you guys are in as a talk show host, and you know, the analysis on Deshaun Watson off the field hasn't changed. That guy sucks. If you just get on the radio every day and go, that guy sucks, then you're like, what's the point of having a show? So I get that eventually you just have to be like, all right, here's what he did on the football field. And with that, what were the signs to just do that ourselves here? Like, what were the signs in the Raiders game, the things that you go, oh, okay, that was better. Perhaps there is some adaptation happening to this Ken Dorsey offense that can be better. And for, you know, Cleveland's sake, hopefully against Washington this weekend, although my listeners certainly hope that's not the case.
Yeah, it's more about accuracy and how accurate he was and how, even with the deep ball, it just seemed like he was just getting more and more comfortable. The interception he had was off Amari Cooper's hands. That was the ball that Amari Cooper is supposed to catch every time. Had an 80-yard touchdown pass that was wiped off the board as well. Like, he just looked confident. He looked like a quarterback that you could trust to go out there and win a game. And I'm telling you, if you saw our offensive line, I'm sure at some point throughout the week, maybe you've gone through and digested it, but we have four starters that are out on the offensive line. It's how do you win with that? You have no offensive line, and then because you have no offensive line, your backup running back situation, because Nick Chubb isn't back yet. He's practicing this week. He's not going to be back in time for Sunday. It has been a trickle-down effect. And on top of that, David Njoku, who's one of the bright spots of your offense, is also gone. If you put Deshaun Watson the way he played this last week, on like a normal team in a normal situation, I think it would have been night and day as far as the box score looks. It's just right now the Browns are in really bad shape for a lot of reasons that aren't Deshaun's fault.
So the other part of the offensive equation, because I have watched, I also just like put on the hazmat suit and was like, all right, time to fire up this All-22. Let's do it. And watch the thing is that's wild, Jonathan, watching it, is it's not just the backups. Like, when Wyatt Teller, who's one of the best guards in the league, is in there, like, he was struggling earlier in the season. And part of that is because I think the balance is so far off pass to run with what they're doing. They are dropping Deshaun back a ton, and a team that has been built on running the football the past bunch of years is not running the football a ton. How much of that is a daily talking point, and what are the decision makers involved saying about their run-pass balance?
Yeah, so Stefanski's always tried to preach that, but even when they had Nick Chubb, they were never running him more than 15 times a game. Like, it just wasn't a thing that they did with him. He had a cap on 20, and so it was very rare when he came close to that. And so they preached the run-pass balance, but we always knew, even with Baker, they wanted to throw the ball. Stefanski wants to throw the ball. That's what he wants to do. And so I think this offense, where you throw a ton with Deshaun, I think that's what he's always wanted to do. That's what he loved about Flacco last year. But Flacco, he just let it rip just as often as he possibly could. He had no run game in back of it, but it didn't really matter. And I think when your backups are Jerome Ford and Deontay Foreman, I think you're okay with making that your recipe. You just needed Deshaun to be better with the deep ball. But against Vegas, he looked like he was getting more comfortable and getting better there. So I think moving forward, once Chubb comes back, maybe it'll tell a different story. But until Chubb comes back, and in particular for this week, I think you're going to see Deshaun throw the ball, even when the matchup tells you that you should be running the ball. Because I know the Commanders' run defense isn't great, but Stefanski, we've taken on some teams with some pretty bad run defenses, hasn't really moved away from that.
Interesting, interesting. The defense, as you mentioned, number one in the league last year, major regression this year. How much of that regression is they've been on the field way too much versus actual issues with either scheme or execution?
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not a been on the field too much thing. They're just different. And there's a few different players that have just gotten cooked. Like MJ Emerson is a guy that maybe your fan base knows, maybe they don't know, but he's the number two corner. And he's somebody that at times gets asked to be the number one corner for the Browns. And he got absolutely destroyed against CeeDee Lamb. Malik Nabers cooked him. Like, he has been on a milk carton. It looks entirely different. And there's like three or four different players that I can speak of that are in that same camp that MJ Emerson is in. But it's nothing to do with being on the field too much or anything. They've just taken a drop off. Jim Schwartz spent the entire offseason talking about how he's not just going to do a fastball. He's going to go and, like, have curveballs. Because they got destroyed in the Texans game, the playoff game. T.J. Stroud just was able to dice them. And so Jim Schwartz kept saying how he's going to basically alternate what they do defensively. And you fast forward, it hasn't worked. A lot of guys are out of position. The missed tackles. I mean, Craig, the number with missed tackles, it's insane. And the yards after those missed tackles leads the NFL. So it's been a what can go wrong has gone wrong type situation. And I don't know how quickly it gets turned around. And the way Jaden Daniels looks, I don't know that this is the week that it does.
So the interesting thing for me, matchup-wise, is between Schwartz and Daniels is Schwartz loves to blitz. That is how he has made his living. He has made a lot of money as defensive coordinator and won a whole lot of football games because of his blitz packages. Blitzing Jaden Daniels seems to be a thing that teams don't want to do. Tampa did it week one, and then he ran quite a bit and was able to escape it. And apparently the other teams that watched that tape went, Tampa got away with it, but we're not going to. And last week, Arizona, like Tampa blitzed 42% of the time. Arizona blitzed 16%. How aggressive do you think Schwartz will be this weekend? Like, will he actually be able to dial it back, or is that just like Stefanski wants to throw it, Schwartz wants to blitz?
It feels sometimes like it. Schwartz has what he does what he wants to do. It's interesting numbers that you put out. I give him credit. I think he's more flexible at times. There's a couple things that are a little bit different for this week, though. Like past couple weeks, for instance, Myles Garrett, who usually just, as you know, defensive player of the year, wrecks games. He's only played about 50% of the snaps in back-to-back weeks. He's got like seven different injuries that he's dealing with. And so there's little things like that that may alter what Schwartz would do in a normal week, because there's a lot of those type of injuries. And a lot of things we found out again today, Alex Wright, another guy, just gone for the year. And it's just they just continue to pile up. So I don't know how much of Schwartz would change based off the fact that he just doesn't have the personnel right now that he's been accustomed to, at least what he was last year, where it felt like he could pick your poison any given week.
Man, what an interesting team you have to cover, Jonathan. Overtime.
It's not great right now. It's not great.
There's stuff to talk about, but trust me, I covered the last 4 years of football here, and frankly, more than that, I've covered the last 10 years of football here at this point. There's only so much meat on the bone of a bad football team. So I wish for you a turnaround. I wish for it after Watson gets benched, and I wish for that to happen starting the week after this one. So that's about as good as I can do for you.
Well, thank you. I wish that Andy Roth is nicer to you in the future. You see, we're just breaking bread, having fun here.
We're just two guys that just became best friends. Jonathan Peterlin, everybody. You can listen to him tonight from 7 to 11 on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, which you can listen to here in D.C. via the free Odyssey app. Jonathan, thanks, dude. Really appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks, man.
That is Jonathan Peterlin. When we get back, quick reaction to something he said, and then at 5:30, never read the comments. Never read the comments coming up in 9-10 minutes here on the Hoffman Show, 5:30. However long it is till 5:30. That's when we'll do Never Read the Comments. We put on the hazmat suits. We dive into the deepest, darkest parts of the internet, the comments section on our YouTube page, and we react to all kinds of good points, nonsense, and everything in between. We just had Jonathan Peterlin on for Not My Beat, host at 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. And it's interesting to hear his perspective and get his insight on the way the Browns think about offense specifically. Because Cleveland right now is kind of doing some of the stuff that Washington did last year. And it should be fairly obvious based off what Washington did last year that I don't mean that as a compliment. Like, going spread with what you'd hope Deshaun Watson would be, put all the off-the-field stuff to the side, but just remember he's, in theory, like a quarterback that's worth $230 million. Clearly hasn't been. But a guy that, okay, when he was in Houston, like, that dude was great on the field, and he could spread the ball around and make big plays down the field. He could create off schedule. Like, he did all this stuff. And so, like, hey, let's let him cook. Put him back there, go spread. Like, in theory, that would work. But the problem is, he's not that guy. Like, he's not good. He's not certainly that good. I would argue he's not even good anymore. And the other hard part about this is areas where you try to make things easier for quarterbacks, he's not good at, and they don't even want to call in the first place. So as a result, everything is super duper leveraged. Like, everything they ask him to do is hard, and he's no longer nearly as good as he used to be at doing hard stuff, and doing hard stuff is hard. So the easy stuff, like, watch Jaden Daniels in quick game, right? Set Hutt, catch the ball in the shotgun, immediately fire an accurate pass before defenders can even be in position to drop out in a zone. Like, let's just hit a guy now for 5 yards. Now it's second and five. We're in good down and distance. Fantastic. Deshaun Watson is a guy who likes to pat the football, has a big, long windup, and doesn't make decisions nearly as quickly as a guy like Daniels or pick your other, you know, quick game killer in the NFL. Guys like Mahomes are fantastic in this area. Josh Allen's frankly gotten really good in this area. Brock Purdy is fantastic here. There's plenty of guys around the league of all varying types of quarterbacking in terms of ceiling that just hit the layups with consistency, and they're very, very quick with their releases, and Watson's not that guy. So if the quick game is not an easy part of your, and like your screen game, it's easier with a quarterback with a quick release because the ball gets out there faster. Every second, every half second you spend with the ball in your hands as a quarterback, telegraphing where that ball is going to go as you turn your shoulders and your hips and your feet, that's an extra half second for a defense to run. Go watch big plays that are screens. A half second is the difference between a guy getting his fingertips on a ball carrier and not really affecting it and getting a whole arm and tripping a guy up. Like, that's the difference. And so your screen game is affected. Your quick game is affected. And then, okay, well, how do we deleverage our quarterback? Well, the obvious answer then is either run the football, or actually it would be both, run the football, which they don't want to do, or use the play action game, specifically from under center, and start to do some of the half rolls and bootlegs and things that try to make easy throws. And, you know, Jonathan just told us, like, Watson's not comfortable with that stuff. He doesn't like to turn his back to the defense. He'd rather be in shotgun. And so what you see sometimes on film is, like, they'll try to move him a little bit in the pocket and try to roll the pocket because their offensive line stinks. Like, they're not very cohesive with it. And so instead of rolling the pocket and moving the pocket and having a pocket, all they do is create gaps for dudes to go kill Deshaun Watson. And then he just gets crushed. And so he's been hit more than, I think, any other quarterback in football. He's been sacked 19 times in 4 games. So offensively, like, they did some stuff against Vegas that was better. and they are potentially explosive, but Washington should be able to do what they did against Arizona. And I also think that there's a real opportunity for Jaden offensively, because I think some of the opportunities that have gone begging for other quarterbacks against this Cleveland team, because they haven't been very sticky in coverage. If Jaden can just hit some of these quick game throws with precision and accuracy and timing, like, I think this could be a week where you see Terry McLaurin gain 30 yards on a slant, or Noah Brown get 30 yards on a slant, because they just dusted a defensive back and Jaden's able to get the ball on time, on target, where I've seen other quarterbacks take a little bit of pressure and throw the ball at a guy's feet or just straight up miss, or the ball's late and so the DB can catch up. And Jaden's accuracy this year has been so good that if he does that again, the Commanders will, like, I guess this is the most declarative way I can say it. Let's, Maddie, let's sports talk this sucker up. You ready for this? Yeah, put your headphones on. Get your get your hot take machine. Pretend you're back between 1 and 4.
Because
here comes the hot. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
A little bit
of
PTSD.
Yeah, here's my hot take. If the Commanders, or if Jaden Daniels plays like he has been, the Commanders will put up 35 points and win this thing going away. Doing that is much harder because the pressure packages and a lot of the other stuff, like, it's not the same. The pressure packages specifically are going to be way more difficult and way more like Tampa, where he might resort to running a lot more this week than he has the previous two, where he has been just ungodly good as a passer. But if he can maintain composure and if the O-line can protect him and he can be as accurate as he has been, they are going to, like, he's going to throw for 350. I don't know that that's the best plan of attack to try for that. I'd probably run the football quite a bit because I don't think they're that good stopping the run, or they haven't been this year. I would make them prove that they can do it because they have some personnel that suggests they should, but, like, there's some ways the Commanders should be able to run it, stay balanced. Like, don't try to throw for 350, but there's some opportunities there. It's a big opportunities week for both sides of the ball.
I mean, I could see that happening.
I could see it. I could also see these pressure packages causing him to have his first multiple interception game and some weird stuff happens and they lose, you know, 21-18.
The one thing that I will say, which is just in the for the benefit of the doubt for Jaden Daniels, week two, Giants, what was the one thing we were really expecting every single down? A blitz.
Well, they don't blitz. They don't blitz like they used to.
They don't
Wink
blitz
was there
as much, but they
Bowen,
still.
Bowen's a lot more vanilla.
We were expecting to see a lot more blitz. We were expecting to see a lot more pressure, and I feel like we saw a bit more on Tampa, but I feel like we saw the frequency.
Tampa blitzed 42% of the time, and the Giants looked at that and were like, "Okay, let's try it." 29% of the time, and that's a little more than they typically do blitz, but also, like, Jaden has picked up so many first downs with his legs that started to scare teams.
But
they don't want to play man-to-man. They don't want to play blitz. Like, they want to try to keep eyes on him, and the problem is he's good enough at deciphering zone coverage, and especially simple zone coverages, which is what you wind up playing when you don't want to be super exotic because you're scared of the quarterback running, that he's been, you know, historically great from an accuracy standpoint through four games. Like, well, those things are all related.
It's really weird that we are in week four going into week five. He has not had what one would consider a rookie game yet. And we can say, based off of what we've seen, yeah, more likely than not, he's going to be able to take care of the pressure. He's going to be able to do what he needs to do, because that's what we've seen. We have yet to see him not do that.
But
until he has that game, which will happen. It happens to everyone.
It could happen this weekend, but there's also a chance that he goes nuts and the hype train is out of control going into week six against Baltimore in a matchup against Lamar Jackson. All right, when we get back, speaking of the hype train, did it get out of control too quickly? It's time for Never Read the Comment. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well, which is where you can leave your comments. You can also leave them, of course, at Craig Hoffman for us to read. I mean, obviously, it's part of the YouTube experience. If we chop up the show, we give you the segments, and then you comment on them, and then we figured there's a lot of potential content there, so we created this.
We tried to warn them. they didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, Matty Essig in to ride shotgun for this one with Anthony at the elusive noon on a Thursday wedding. Yes, that is real. But Matt, we always start off with what we call the amuse-bouche, right? Let's just get our palate going a little bit. Let's get have a little fun before we dive into the meatier comments. And we got two varieties this week. Apparently, I gotta check this out and see if there's anything we can do about it. I mean, the video is already on the internet, so it's probably just gonna let it live at this point. But apparently, in the latest episode of Take Command, the film review from earlier in the week, there's a section where my camera went down, and so there's a part where apparently my lips are moving and I'm talking, or my lips are not moving on the video and I'm not talking. And so someone was like, "Hey, why are Craig's lips not moving while he's talking?"
It's spooky season.
And then someone was like, "The video is just a loop of Craig, of him listening intently. They must have messed up his camera or something." And then Austin 2591 says, "He saves a Craig listening and nodding intently .mp4 file on his desktop for just such occurrences." An MP4 is a video file, in case anyone's lost on that one. Which I feel like I just ruined the joke because I had to explain it, but I don't know. There's also people that didn't get the joke because they don't know what an MP4 is.
It's your background. You just need to have a little bit of the, what do they call it for in film when you have to have like the little
B-roll?
Bits. Yeah, it's your B-roll. You have
typically
sit and stare B-roll.
I wonder what happened, because typically when we have issues, what we do is we just put whoever's talking on a one-shot. Like, you can take me out of it. I don't need to be there intently nodding while Logan does it. I guess the problem might have been I was talking and the camera messed up. So you can't put me on a one shot if I'm the one that's messing up. Otherwise, you have Logan listening to me talk and Logan's on camera.
That would be a pretty terrifying one shot of you just staring there, staring at the screen, not moving your mouth. But all of a sudden, there's just noise coming out.
Yeah.
I
think we should have made a graphic. I think whatever I'm talking about, we should have made a graphic. All right, we'll have to talk to the production department. The other amuse-bouche that we have is we have a comment. We did our tier rankings yesterday, and we put the Commanders up in our puncher's chance category. And Raymond Smith 2040 says, "Matt, talk to me after the offseason about being contenders." After the offseason, which is the season, which is where we are right now. So Raymond, we are talking to you about being contenders. In exactly when you asked, after the offseason, unless you meant next offseason, but then that we'd already know because this season would be over. See the flaw in that?
Yeah, I'm confused.
Yeah, I think he meant after this. I don't even know what he meant, because after the season doesn't make any sense either. Raymond, you need to try again. You need to try again.
After the break, maybe? I don't know.
Sometimes we just have a little fun and then we keep moving because we think too hard about it.
That's why you don't read the comments.
Brian, you get Maddie.
I get it.
You get it. All right. Here's the actual comments on said power rankings. Maddie McMatMat, 5822. Is that you?
That is not me.
That is not you? Oh, that's right. You're Maddie McMatMat, 5823. This is Maddie McMatMat, 5822. Goes, chill. We are 4 weeks in. The Earthaholic says, we're regular echelon right now, which, by the way, I love that. Upper, because the video title is, have the Commanders made it to the upper echelon of the NFL? He says, the regular echelon. That's my goal in life. I just want to be in the regular echelon, baby. We have to beat Baltimore and at least split between Dallas and Philly to get into the upper echelon. But I'll take it, because last year we weren't even lower echelon. We were echeloff. Hail to the Redmanders. Honestly, that's one of the best comments we've ever gotten on a video in the history of the channel.
That's a good one.
That's pretty good. Sean, come on. Says, to me, we still have to get over one more hurdle before I can go all in. That is beating the teams we are supposed to beat. The other games, we were the underdogs. Now we are the favorites. We almost always have lost these types of games when we are the favorites. And I'm shaking like Scooby-Doo over this Browns game. Hail. To the, like, chill, we're 4 weeks in thing. Yeah. And I think we've done a good job on this show, at least trying to say, like, all we're doing is looking at what they are right now. If the season was 4 weeks long, they were one of the best teams in the NFL. So, we know it's not. We know that the season will continue to go on. But they have been, so far, one of the best teams in the NFL. I know a lot of potential flaws and things that need to get fixed and improved. And some of those, by the way, are on the right track. But through 4 weeks, we're allowed to say what they've been, which is good. We don't have to reserve credit for things that have already been done. And I think that's kind of my point to all of this is like, yeah, do I want to see more? Of course. I'm not like, oh, hey, they deserve a Super Bowl ring right now. Or even, hey, I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl right now. There's a difference between looking back and evaluating and projecting that forward. And I think I've tried to do my best to say where those lines exist. But realistically, like, they've been really good and we shouldn't be feel afraid to say that. And like, Philly has looked not great and Dallas has got some issues and New York is kind of what we thought they would be. And so, you know, when we say like, oh, they've been the best team in the NFC East so far, it doesn't mean that I think they're actually going to win it. They've got a one game lead and they're, I don't think, the most talented team. So there's a great chance. And by the way, they haven't faced New York or Philly, Dallas or Philly at all yet. So they've got 4 games remaining against the 2 teams that I think are bigger, or the biggest threats to them. But they have been the best team so far. And I just think it's okay to say that. We don't have to chill on that. That's fine to say. Just we don't have to then take that and be like, they're going to the Super Bowl. Because they're probably not. Maybe they will. But probably not. Very, very much.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas. This is sports the way it should be.
Likely. Probably not. What was the craziest thing said on your show today, Maddie? Matt, for those that don't know, especially like in the YouTube audience that's not as familiar, don't listen to the radio all day. Matt is the producer of the Chris Russell Show. And on Thursdays, Linnell is there and all hell breaks loose. And were there any over the last 2 days that Linnell has been in, especially? Are there any huge, we can call them overreactions, over projections based off what has been so far?
You know, actually, I don't think there really have been any over projections. One of the things that we've been talking about a lot over on on Chris's show is really, where is the state of the team, specifically the defense? Because we know what's going on offense. They are overproducing for what we thought they would be doing. They are fantastic in the run game. We did expect some semblance of a decent run game between Anthony Lynn, Brian Robinson. I mean, yeah, they had the staff, they have the roster. That wasn't going to be the question. The production that we're getting across all the receivers, the tight end work, the offensive line actually standing up now, not to the best opponents, but actually doing what it needs to do.
They were so great last week. Yeah.
We've been doing a lot of, hey, let's take
just
a
taking deep, stock, taking inventory. Yeah,
because we are a quarter of the way through the season. We are leading the NFC East. We have, not arguably, statistically, the highest passer rating through 4 games for any quarterback,
right,
for a rookie.
Yeah, and by the way, they've got the most efficient passing offense, second most efficient passing offense, most efficient rushing offense, I think I have those two right, according to like DVOA or all those kind, or success rate. I don't remember which one it is. It's EPA per play. That's what it is. Those two stats, like, they're killing it, which is pretty important stats because it's EPA stands for estimated points added. So it's like every time they run the ball, they're averaging like adding, some percentage of a point every single time, like a significant percentage of a point. So it's like, hey, if you run the ball 20 times and you have a plus one EPA, that's like you've added 20 points to the scoreboard based off of how well you're doing it. So there is so much to be happy about. And then defensively, like, yeah, there's been a lot of concerns, but how you think those things will trend. And I kind of think the offense will come back towards the middle. I think they'll be a top 10 offense this year. But defensively, like, they'll crack the top 20, I think. And so then what does that mean? And that's the hard part of like, okay, if the offense produces it 70, 80% of what it is right now, and the defense can produce 10 to 15% better, like, what does that actually lead to?
But the big question, obviously, being, is it too early to jump on the hype train? Is it too soon to be freaking out about how good we've been playing? No. You can absolutely jump on the hype train. The one thing that I will say is don't expect this train to exit at the Super Bowl or even definitely get to the playoffs. This is a hype train because they are playing well right now, and we're a franchise in an area that hasn't really been all that used to this success.
Yeah, I mean, I'm big on not telling people what to do with their feelings, but if I were a fan, I would probably, and like, this is what I'm doing is someone in my job who is not a quote-unquote fan, but like wants them to win. I'm trying to enjoy good football. I know that there's a chance that it won't last, and I trust that in the long term, they'll play consistently good football, even if it's, you know, years beyond this. Like, I don't want four great games and then four bad years. Like I'll take the next four games regressing and then, you know, starting to pick up slowly and then 4 to 8 years of great ball that follow starting next year. Like I'm willing to be patient here for a long, long road of success. So it's going to be interesting to watch, but they also are doing things that feel sustainable. And I think that's the other thing too. It's not like sometimes you watch teams play and they're winning. Like to an extent, the Chiefs right now, like the Chiefs shouldn't be 4-0. Like they've got some issues that are kind of big that they need to figure out. But like also, I guess it's sustainable because Pat Mahomes is the guy that's covering for the mistakes and he's always going to cover for mistakes and their defense is really good. But like those are the kinds of things where you're like Baltimore to reverse it, right? The Ravens started poorly record-wise, but they were playing good football. Like eventually that was going to turn. And I think the thing for Washington is if you don't just look at the record and be like, oh, wow, they're 3-1. If you look at how they're playing, they deserve to be. And they're doing things that are going to lead them to win more football games if they can just simply keep doing them at remotely close to the levels they're doing them now offensively and defensively. Like, again, the performance between Cincinnati and Arizona was not as big as the scoreboard would suggest. The difference is one time they were facing Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison, who's a rookie, and the other time they're facing Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, and they're not rookies, and they're really, really, really good. So that begs the question, should the Commanders try to improve their roster in the short term? If they can do it without doing anything negatively in a massive way to the long term, a.k.a. the Davante Adams question. We've talked about it a couple times this week here on the show, including with our guy Clinton Yates yesterday. I want to explore it, but I am out ultimately on it. Like I have to think about it, but ultimately I would sit out on the Davante Adams trade. But here's what the listeners say, the commenters say. Terrence Cook, 9147, need too much help on defense for this deal. If we were contenders for the Super Bowl, hell yeah, but I would rather get a cornerback. To that, I would simply say, where are you getting your cornerback? Because that's not on the table. Like, again, I'm probably keeping my powder dry for reasons that we'll get to in a second, but it's not like it's Davante Adams or a corner. It's, do you want Davante Adams or not? And I think ultimately my answer would be no, but I have to think about it because Davante Adams is not some, even really good receiver. Forget a slouch. Like, he's not really good. He's a great, great player. So that like is kind of my response to this one. Reginald Revis or Regina L. Drevis. I don't know which one it is. I'm going to guess Reginald. Reggie says, why take yourself out of the T. Higgins sweepstakes? One, you never want to be in a sweepstakes because those involve bidding wars and that's a lot of money. Two, although I do think T. Higgins is a great fit here, like they're different players. Davante Adams is a legit still blue chip player. And T. Higgins is very, 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 very good. They're different calibers. And like what I just talked about, the difference in Ja'Marr Chase and Marvin Harrison Jr. at this stage of their careers is kind of, I don't want to say it's the same difference between T. Higgins. I think T. Higgins is actually probably a better player slightly than Marvin Harrison at this point. Like he ain't Ja'Marr. He ain't Davante. And so they are different. But if you want to prefer to keep your powder dry and think you'd rather just pair T. Higgins and Terry McLaurin in the long term for next offseason and not give up any draft capital, I also don't think that that is a bad calculation. I just wanted to point out the difference. I actually come much more on this from Andrew Matthews, 2645, says their draft was so good that I don't want to give them, aka draft picks, away. The rebuild is ahead of schedule, but it's still a rebuild. I agree with that. That is ultimately where I come down, which is Although, as you'll hear about in our pick six coming up, like, they need more out of Mike Sanders still. And you know, second round pick, he has struggled at times. Ultimately, like, he's going to be fine. Sanders still is got all the right makeup, so many great skills. He's not necessarily making the same mistake twice, but he's making some new mistakes and that are maybe Cousins. But he's a young player that's going to get better. But like Sinnott, he is doing a lot of really good stuff that he's been asked to do. You see Brandon Coleman and how he's coming along. Obviously, Jaden seems to be a grand slam with the second overall pick. But you have a guy in Adam Peters you trust to draft players. And with that, and you see Jerzon Newton, by the way, second rounder, going crazy when he's on the field. He plays so hard. And if he figures a couple things out, like, he could be a monster, really great player on that defensive line. If you have a guy who's that good at drafting, why would you give up draft picks? It is the best way to acquire talent. And so, Devontae, great, but I would probably not want to have to give up the draft picks that it would take to get him. I'm less concerned about the money because I would restructure his contract. He's got like no guaranteed money left, so you have some leverage there, and they have a ton of cap space. That's not the part that worries me. The locker room stuff, honestly, like, I think they've got a good enough culture here, good enough insulators, guys like Bobby and Zach who are older that could help, and Jaden, just the way he goes about his business, everyone kind of falls in line behind him. And in a shorter time period, like, I'm not that concerned. My concern is the draft picks, and that's the thing I can't get over and why I ultimately would not do the deal. Couple of good comments to end here. Good questions, good comments. This one I thought was just a good comment. William Bontrager, 2349, frequent commenter. Appreciate you, William. Always have good stuff. The most amazing thing other than Daniels is there have been almost zero drops from anyone. Terry might have the only drops this season, and those were on difficult catches. That's incredible. I think the overall level of offensive execution is worth shouting out, which is why I picked this comment out. The receivers in general have been very, very good catching the ball. I think the routes have been pretty good. They've done a good job blocking for each other and in the run game. The tight ends, same thing. Good routes, good distribution. They've been just Bates and Sinnott as blockers. Holy crap. Like, there's going to be situations this weekend where they will have John Bates block Myles Garrett. And I don't want that on any kind of regular basis. And I hope it happens on, like, the backside of a rollout the other way. So let's get Jaden a little bit extra space. But the fact that you can even think about doing that is crazy. John Bates has been fantastic at the very specific things that he wants to do or is asked to do. And then he's the threat enough in the pass game that you can't just completely ignore him. Obviously, the running backs, the offensive line, like, they're getting better week over week, communication-wise. They just, everyone in the way they're playing offensively from an execution standpoint is outstanding. And I think that does go back to Cliff. Like, they're so confident and so sure of what they're doing that there's no hesitation and just a freedom to go out and not think. They're just doing, which is the best way to play. You're just locked in, and you know exactly where you need to be, and stuff happens like you expect it because they're well-taught. It's well designed. It's well called. Jaden's obviously doing a great job, but then everyone else just has to fit in. And boy, are they doing a great job of that. And then last but not least, question from Mike Hughes, 3965. So I hear people saying that Kwon is doing a good job. I don't really notice him a lot during games. So am I missing something? I'm curious if Tyler Owens might bring a little more back there. The Owens part of this is very silly because he's an undrafted free agent rookie. Stop asking for too much from undrafted free agent rookies, especially when it comes to replacing guys who are playing well. I will say, like, Kwon is quieter than you would think based off of what the coaches say, but it's in part because when you're a DB, part of what you do is you shut things down so they don't happen, right? So he's doing a good job in the post, and there's nobody open downfield, so he doesn't have a play to make because the quarterback doesn't throw it. So there's situations like that. But also, if you want to see the impact of Quan Martin more directly and his physicality and how it shows up, watch at the end of plays. Like, whistles blowing, who's around the ball? I guarantee you 20 is going to be there. And that energy, that impact of little late hits, you know, if there's a pile, like, he's going to find a way in there and he might knock a ball out. Like, the interceptions and stuff will come for him. But the physicality he brings, snap in, snap out, and I would say Percy Butler and Jeremy Chan are starting to do this really well as well. There's a play last week where there's kind of like a one of those pileups at the line, and Percy comes flying down and just knocks the crap out of James Conner. And you're like, oh, that's fun. So all those guys are playing with great physicality, and it's not going to show up as much because they're not. Hopefully, your safeties aren't making a ton of solo tackles, but watch for those big pileups around the ball. Quan Martin's going to be there, and he's going to arrive with bad intentions, and that's the kind of stuff that Joe Witt Jr. absolutely loves. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, speaking of Joe Witt Jr., you will hear from him and Cliff Kingsbury, the Commanders offensive coordinator. We will get to what they had to say on their Thursday podium sessions in our pick six at six on the Team 980.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.